Thank you very much, Bob, and good afternoon, everyone. It's a joy to see you here. The staff was asking me on the way up how many would be here today. I said, I don't know. They just said that registration was better than any seminar they had before. I said, that may mean they had 5 on the past occasions, and we have 10 now. So it's good to see we have more than that. I just would like to mention in regard to the Pastor School brochure you have, please notice if you're a student that there's a special rate for students. It's listed on the back, $10 for the school. And if housing is needed, we'd be glad to provide that if you let us know ahead of time. We believe it is an outstanding opportunity for people who are interested in God's work to come together and find out what some are doing, get some insight and some input on what methods are available today to accomplish the purpose that we want to accomplish. I would also like to mention that the schedule for the day will include the coming of our wives to the session tonight. We noticed that there were wives that were going to be present and felt like there might be some input that should be given to the female audience, and the ladies will be coming up for our 6 o'clock dinner time, and then will be with us for the 7 to 8:30 session, and we want them to answer any questions that the ladies might have that are in the institute today. So I wanted you to know about that. Now, in regard to Sunday, just to let you know what's been happening, I have been invited, or had been invited, to write a weekly column for the Lacey Leader, which is a weekly newspaper in our community. I started that at the end of August and have been writing every week. And just before the election, I was asked by a group of women to express myself on Referendum 40, which was the referendum regarding the Women's Commission in the state of Washington, which was appointed by the governor and funded by tax dollars, and that commission happened to favor abortion. It favored birth control on demand without parental consent to minors and some other things that we just don't approve of. And so I contemplated it and decided I would write an article on the subject, and I titled it Referendum 40 and the Liberated Lady. And I gave a biblical base for all of my remarks, and I thought it was a pretty good article myself. I read it several times before I mailed it in. I guess it was so good that it stirred up the devil. And there were many letters sent to the newspaper, very harsh letters, and they printed them, at least some of them, and took a great deal of space in a copy of the paper to air these letters. I should have brought that along. I didn't even think about it. But it was very interesting. Phone calls came, very vindictive-type phone calls, hang-up-type phone calls. One thing I said in the article was that my observation has been that when women don't accept their biblical position, they become power hungry and a little masculine. And of course they were calling up, "We're not power hungry, man." And they bring their pickets and, "We're not fighting anybody," and storming up and down the sidewalk. The very thing to say is the very thing they do, but they don't see it. So, out of all that, we learned that one woman particularly had taken out a permit to picket and had put up posters in the state offices and was soliciting help. And they thought they would get 200 to 300 picketers. It only turned out to be about 35, I think. It was kind of wet and cold. That might have affected it a little. But we told the people on Wednesday night, last week, to be kind and loving. Don't drive on the grounds and start yelling at these people and go out there and tell them to get away and all that. So we prepared coffee, cookies, and I told the sound people to put a speaker outside so they'd have to listen to the service. Which they did. And numbers of our people went out and just talked to these people. And one of them has had a great deal of experience in dealing with demonstrators, particularly overseas, and just fantastic. He was probably out there an hour talking to some of these people. One woman had an armband on which said Marshall. She was the authority, I guess, and this fellow was talking to a young lady who was demonstrating, and she marched up and said, "You can't talk to him!" And he said to the marshal, "What do you mean, she can't talk to me? Are you so liberated that you can't talk to people?" And this young lady said, "Yeah, why can't I talk to him?" And turned and proceeded. There was another thing that happened. A group that was not supposed to be out there came, the atheistic anti-God group, saw this in the paper, and they came with their very harsh signs, nasty type signs, that embarrassed the women who were there with the permit. So, all in all, I would say this, that it has been totally in our favor. It was on the radio yesterday, and will be in the paper this week, pictures and so on. And papers have sold well in Olympia. The editor of the paper called me up and asked me how we were doing yesterday after the Sunday. I said, "Just fine." In fact, I said, "It seems to me that we're gaining ground, certainly not losing it." And he was glad that we felt that way because he was a little concerned about how we might react to the total picture. But I assured him that we were just fine, enjoying the publicity, and the speaker turned out to the crowd that was on the sidewalk, carried my prayer for them. And I was told that when I started praying for them, every one of them turned their back to the building as though they weren't listening. And it wasn't long after that that they disbanded and left the property. So that's just some of the interesting things that happen when you try to take a public a stand in various issues, and we just feel at Evergreen that our church is not to be under a bushel. We're to be out there where people can see us, and anything that we can give a biblical base to, we are going to attach ourselves to that and let the truth stand for itself. You never have to defend truth. Truth defends itself, and we're not fighting with anybody. We just feel we need to say some things, and when you do, liable to get into a position like we got into. But I see it serving a good purpose. All things work together for good. And we're just grateful to be out on the front line. One thing for sure, you probably couldn't find anybody in Olympia that doesn't know about us one way or another. And I think that's in our favor. I would like the gentleman with me, before I get started in my introductory remarks, to come and stand at these microphones. I want to introduce them and then have them tell you where they have come from, a little bit of their background, so you'll know them and be able to relate to them in some way. Gentlemen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 5 microphones. I think that's just about right. Glad to have our staff with us today. The only person we do not have here that's full-time is our school director. He's not, as it were, on the pastoral staff. He's a layman, but he is in charge of our school program, and anything that relates to that, Pastor Holteen can handle. So we left him with the school instead of bringing him along today. I'd like to start in order of the men's coming to Evergreen Christian Center. That, of course, begins with Al Holteen, second to my left, who has been with us over 7.5 years. He came in March of 1970, so his 8th anniversary will be next March. He came as Director of Youth and Christian Education. That portfolio changed, and he took off stuck with Christian Ed, including daycare and day school and those kinds of responsibilities. Changed again when we got a full-time director of school, so now it's just Christian education as far as the total portfolio is concerned. That includes Mission Ed, Royal Rangers, Sunday School, Vacation Bible School, Alpha Team. Tell us where you came from and anything you'd like about your qualifications in the area of Christian education.
I grew up in Seattle, not far from here. Westminster is my home church. My folks still go there. I grew up there all of my life until a point just, I guess, about the last part of high school where you kind of want to get away from your parents a little bit, and I started going to Calvary Temple and spent a couple of years there and really began ministry there under Alex Hunter. I was kind of an assistant to the assistant at that point. Alex Hunter was youth and Christian education at Calvary Temple and I think was teaching here at the same time, and I guess saw in me somebody that could give him a little bit of help, and I started out one afternoon a week working in the office thinking, boy, this is great, getting a chance to do that kind of ministry. And then at a point in time, Faith Temple, it was called then, now Christ Church of Northgate, was looking for somebody with a little bit more time. And so Alex recommended me to go there. So I moved one church north and was there for 2 years. And then Richmond, every place I go, they change their name. I don't know why, which is now Shoreline Community Church, was in need of a youth and Christian education person on a full-time basis. And again, Alex Hunter recommended me. So it's good to get on the good side of the Christian education director or prof at Northwest College, because they can be a great help to you. And we were there for about 4 years. And Pastor Cole, one day, through someone else, asked if there was any interest on our part in making a move. And at that point, my answer was no. We had thought that when we left Richmond, it would be for the mission field, and have had a real desire for missions probably ever since I was at Northwest College. And at that point, said, well, at least we'll talk. And the more we talked together, the more we could see the real potential that there was there in Olympia, and felt a real excitement about the ministry there. Matter of fact, when Pastor Cole had gone to Olympia, I had said to one of my friends, well, I'd like to go down and work with him in Olympia someday. I had seen in him some things that I really liked, and I saw in that church a tremendous potential, and little did I know, a few years later, I'd be there. And we have been there for the past 7.5 years. I went to Northwest College for my first 2 years of education, had planned to go through all 4 years, and then felt the Lord really dealing with me, and one summer made a move and went to Seattle Pacific for 3 years, and then came back and taught some freshman English here and finished a degree in Christian education, and then taught a couple of Christian Ed courses. So my relationship with Northwest has been for a long time and really good.
Thank you, Al. Because of Al's tenure with us, when I'm away, he's kind of number one man in charge of things. If the buck stops anywhere, stops at him when I'm around the world somewhere. We just had our first staff change in 7.5 years. We had had no staff changes. That is, no one had left. We've added, but we had not lost anyone until last month when Wayne Hathaway chose to resign after over 5 years in youth ministry, and he would have been the next one I would introduce, but he's no longer with us and is taking over as associate pastor at Shoreline Community with Ben Berkland the 1st of December. So after him came Harold Ogren, who is the second from the end down there, the tall, handsome, grandfatherly-looking gentleman. We use him to give our staff a sense of maturity. I wanted to say that before he did. Harold had been in Olympia 15 years and was interim pastor before I got there. He had pastored for several years, had a severe heart problem, and the doctor said, you cannot pastor anymore, and he left full-time ministry, moved to Olympia, and became a foreman in a construction firm, and served the Lord through the Olympia Church in many capacities. When our program continued to develop, one day I felt strongly that God wanted him to stop working as a foreman in a construction firm and get back into full-time ministry without having all of the administrative load and so on that a normal pastor would have. And I went to him and presented that idea, asked him to pray about it, and after living in the community and being in the church for that long, he became a staff member in the area of visitation and senior citizen ministry. He has been with us now 3.5 years on staff, as well as the 15 years that he was in the church as, I guess we'd have to say, a layman, and yet in various aspects of lay ministry. Harold Ogden.
I'm a Washington boy. I was born in South Bend, and I have lived in this state all except for 2 years when we were pastoring a church in Great Falls, Montana. I was saved along with my wife the same night back in 1941. We went to the little chapel Bible school here in Seattle night and graduated from there, and that's where we launched our ministry from. We also pastored in Wenatchee, also down at PL, and that's where we had a good thing going when I had my heart attack that Pastor Cole caught up, talked about, mentioned. For the last number of years, we have lived in Olympia, and we have enjoyed that town. We have seen individuals come and go, and I'll never forget the moment when Pastor Cole stopped me one evening on the way into the sanctuary and asked me if I would consider joining the staff. And the moment he mentioned that, I knew that this is where God wanted us. It took a little bit longer for my wife to come around, about 6 months, in fact. But she came around and was willing to join hands with me, and once again, we have been in the ministry, and it has been a thrill. The relationship that we have had, the leadership that is second to none, how I appreciate the privilege of just having a part in what God is doing today. And I just feel like we're on the verge of beautiful, wonderful, great things to transpire as we keep our shoulder to the wind.
Thank you, Harold. I would like to add something Harold said to me after his first year on the staff, which ought to encourage any of you who are looking to associate-type ministries as compared with the head man role. Harold said to me after his first year with us, I have seen more people come to Christ under my ministry this year than I had in all of my ministry before. Through the hospital visitation, which he's responsible for, and the other contacts, he had had more people come to Christ in that position. And I think, I don't want to be putting words in his mouth or any of these men, but I think he's finding tremendous fulfillment in this role today.
I was going to say that these last 3.5 years have been the most fulfilling years of my life.
Thank you. Roger Brown, in the gray suit. Joined our staff a year ago, last July, coming out of public education. He was for 8 years the music or choral director at Centralia High School. I'll let him give you a little more of the background because it's rather interesting. He is now the minister of music at Evergreen Christian Center.
Thank you, Pastor Cole. My experience has been a little bit different than most pastors in that I had no intentions of the ministry. My educational background was at Eastern Washington State College over at Cheney. From that, I went into education and for 12 years total. During that time, however, I felt God's call in my life. I was with the Baptist group, General Conference Baptist, and because of that call, I entered Bethel Theological Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, where I completed 2 years. I didn't complete the Master of Divinity degree, but I was well on my way. It was quite a struggle with wife and 2 children and jobs and school and, you know, a lot of you, not telling you anything. So I decided to return to teaching. We returned to Washington State, where Pastor Cole mentioned we spent 8 years in Centralia. During the last few years of that time, we were very dissatisfied church-wise, so we heard about Evergreen Christian Center and began attending. And I could tell that these people had something that I didn't have as a Baptist. So soon after that time, both my wife and I and our 2 children were filled with the Spirit. And then the doors really swung wide open. I became very dissatisfied as a teacher because I couldn't really share my faith. I had a new sense of evangelistic fervor that I hadn't had as before. So it really changed my life. Talked with Pastor Cole about it. I said, I really would like to do something in the Christian area. What would you suggest? I just made an appointment to go up and talk with him. He says, oh, well, what do you teach? I said, music. Oh, really? He says, that's very interesting. We're looking for a person in vocal music. Or are you interested in something? Wow, I just about jumped over his desk and kissed him. As a result of that, I was put on the staff, as you mentioned, 1.5 years now. And I've just been thrilled with the opportunity. It's rather unusual, being I'm almost 40 years old and only the pastorate for less than 2 years. It's most unique that God would call me to this high privilege. So it's a thrill for me. And like Pastor Ogren has said, it's about the most exciting adventure and thrill and fulfillment that I've ever known in my life. And it just keeps getting gooder.
Thank you, Raj. That was a unique day when he came just on a normal appointment to talk to me about his frustrations. And I'd looked all up and down the coast for a music director and found one. Pastor Hathaway had the dual role of youth and music, and we wanted to break it because of the growth, which we did when Roger came into the picture. And when he sat there and talked to me one day, I think you know what I mean when I talk about something leaping inside of you. I just knew that this was God and here was our man. He was sitting in our congregation every Sunday and I didn't know it. So I knew he was there, but I didn't know that he had this feeling and this ability. So it's been beautiful. The next person in terms of service is the man down at the far end, Roger Lund. Roger is our business administrator. And he came into my office just like Roger Brown did, totally frustrated with what was happening to him. And I'll let him give a little bit of that background, too. He has been on our staff since April of this year as business administrator full-time.
I'm not from the state of Washington. I'm not from the Assembly of God Church, but I love it at Evergreen. I went to a Christian college in quotes that in chapel they announced the all-school beer bust. And that was really an exciting time. And I hate to say it, but I was a participant in that at that point in my life. And it was about 1962 in the state of Minnesota. I was working on a new house in a nice part of Minneapolis. When a man pulled up to my driveway and came running up and said, hey, you got to come quick, your dad is in a coma in the hospital. And I jumped into my car and ran over to their house and changed clothes and ran down to the hospital. And I spent the next 48 hours with my mother watching my dad in his final moments of life. And that one evening, pastor was there from the church I was attending in Minneapolis. And I said, Pastor Fraline, I'm not satisfied with what's going on in my life. I've got money, I've got a nice house, I've got a decent family, but here's my dad with all sorts of money, and he's dying. He can't buy his health, he can't buy his life back even at that point. said, something's wrong with me, and I've got to do something. And I knew there was no question about about salvation. I knew what that was, and I knew how I had to get that on track. And we talked for a long time. We prayed together. I got my life back together. And at that moment, God began to deal with me that there was something more than the job I had in an accounting firm in Minneapolis. And that's all I really knew. I started helping in a Young Life Club at that point, and it was just a couple months later that I knew God had something even further. And in the summer of 1963, I journeyed to Colorado Springs, and I joined the Young Life staff as their accountant and later the controller. And as God continues to work, you know, I just had more and more fun with high school kids and less fun running the office. And so about the summer of 1970, an interesting thing, guy came up to me at a camp. He says, "Raj, I'm going to pray that you get out of that office and out where the kids are." I kind of shook my head because I didn't know what was out there. But God works in miracles, and at Christmas in 1970, we found out what Olympia, Washington was. At that point, I didn't know it was even the capital. But, and probably some of you don't, too. That is the capital down there where we are. But anyhow, we came out here, still not knowing a whole lot about the Assembly of God Church. But we were, my wife and I were the area directors for Young Life in Olympia for 3.5 years, at which point I got to know very well Pastor Cole and Pastor Al, and we began to have a beautiful relationship with them. And God sent us back to our first church ministry 3.5 years ago now. Went back to Minneapolis, our hometown, our home church, and took over the job of Minister of Outreach and Business Administrator in a downtown church, approximately the same size as Evergreen. Then, I forget time, but a year and a half ago or so, I came back out here for a church conference. And God opened up a neat little business adventure called the Good News Bookstore. If you're ever in Olympia, stop by. This isn't mad. But in the midst of getting a new business started and obviously not having a whole lot of funds to get it going, I was sharing with Glenn one day my need for some money and the fact that we just felt that our little business was doing good and could survive without me there every day, and that I was really wanting to do something, wanting to get back into ministry, not even thinking, kind of like Raj, not even thinking about staff at Evergreen Christian Center. And he popped the same question on me that he did Raj a year before, and that they were looking for a business administrator. Well, I just jumped at the chance, and we're just having a great time as a staff, which I think has been one of the most exciting places I've ever been, just being able to share with these men, to work with them, to be part of a ministry which is a little different part than they have, with being a business administrator.
Throughout this day, one thing that may come out through Roger's comments, and I hope it does, is the unfortunate circumstances he worked under in Minneapolis on a church staff. I think all the staff left, except the senior pastor, because they just couldn't work with the man. He wouldn't work with them. So without telling what church it was, maybe some of these things could help us in our dialogue today, because now he's working on a staff where he feels, I think, totally the opposite. And that's important. Now, our last man up here is Mike Axton. He's been with us a total of 2 weeks. Coming from First Assembly in Spokane, taking Pastor Hathaway's place, and he's already finding a beautiful slot in the body of Christ in Olympia. We really love him. Feel God has sent him to us, and though he hasn't been with us very long, I'm sure he will have some things to contribute to the day that will be very valuable and important. Mike, give us a little background.
Thank you, Pastor Cole. It's a joy to be back at my old school that I graduated from. A little bit of background very shortly. I was raised in a typical Pentecostal home all my life in the Assemblies of God. I came to Northwest College on the basis because I had a call of God in my life. After attending here, I became involved in two churches on an interim basis. One was Federal Way Assembly of God, which was co-pastored by Mel Delgetty and Woodrow Fletcher, that's on staff now. Good Northwest College, good to see you, Fletcher. And did I say Fletcher? Great story, but I got that one. And then after that, we went on staff over in Bremerton with Bill Edgington during my senior year. And after that, we received a call from First Assembly of God in Spokane, went over there, and we were at that church 3.5 years, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I was privileged enough to stay with that church, even though it changed captains, if you can get my significance there. After my first 6 months there, the senior pastor resigned, and I resigned with him, because I feel it's very appropriate that the staff resigns and the senior resigns, the senior pastor resigns. And I stayed on as the interim pastor for approximately 3 months there. And when Walter Buck, who used to pastor Evangel Temple in Seattle, came over, I told him I was resigning. He says, "We'll just hang on a second." So we talked and shared, and we communed together, and we found we had an agreeable spirit about it. So I stayed on and had a very fruitful ministry there. Very fruitful. In fact, it was a hard struggle, a really hard struggle, because Pastor Buck and I got along so well together. We had such a unique ministry together there. Just this last year in the summer, I had received 3 calls from 3 different churches to come on staff, and I couldn't feel any peace about it. Because all my time there at First Assembly was such a great one. I had just accomplished some goals that I had set 3.5 years ago. We had, I believe, a very good ministry going, really a turned-on group of young people and college students especially. And I look at these opportunities because I believe I should. When God opens the door, He can always shut the door in front of you. So I went and looked at these churches and couldn't feel a peace about it. Not a peace at all. And then when Pastor Cole called, I said, "Well, here it goes again." And you know, it's really frustrating. It really is, because it upset your ministry at that time. I said, "Well, let's immediately get together. If this is God, I want to feel a peace right now. I don't want to wait a month. I don't want to wait 2 weeks. If this is God, let's get on with it." So we met, and I poured out my heart where I was, and I had nothing to lose. I just told him where I was and where my ministry was headed, where I felt a call of God to be a senior pastor someday. And doing that, there was really a united spirit that I appreciated, and I felt God leading us. My wife had to quit her teaching job, everything. We're now in Olympia, and the Lord has really brought us with such peace that I have sensed, and such a that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is where God wants me. And that really, well, that's worth everything to me. And I rejoice in that.
Thank you very much, Dallas. You can sit down for a bit, especially Harold. You've been standing up here a long time. We have a lot of fun together, you probably detect. Just a little background. I should have our summer intern speak, too. He's here today, Rick Cole. But I don't think he's prepared, so I'll let him off. Glad he came today, though, to find out something about his staff. A little background. I don't want to dwell on this, but I guess sometimes we assume that everybody knows somewhat the story of Evergreen, and find out at times there are people who don't. I've been there a little over 10 years. It was in May of 67 that I went to Olympia. There were 225 people that greeted me on the first Sunday. That was in the morning. In the evening, there weren't quite that many. I said you could have shot a cannon through the building and not hit anybody that Sunday night, which is true. And they had been losing people pretty steadily over the previous couple, 3 years. So So we felt challenged. We felt there was only one way that the church could go, and that was up, or else close it. And so we were determined that it would go up and improve and increase its ministry and outreach. And thank the Lord, it has. I have been a staff member. I have been an associate in two churches, one right out of Bible college, and the other just before I went to Olympia, was at Calvary Temple for 18 months just before going to Olympia. But of course, I had never had staff of my own. And as the church began to develop, I recognized that I was going to have help if we were going to continue. And in 1968, January, Dan Sechrist joined me as an associate, particularly in the area of youth and visitation. He stayed 2 years, and Al Holteen came on board, and since then we've been adding to the staff. So a lot that I share today simply comes out of what's happened in the last 10 years. And nobody taught me how to work with staff, and I'm not sure I know yet. I just know I'm working with one and learning probably every day as we move along. Years ago, the churches of the Assemblies of God were not known for their size. There were not too many what we would call big churches. The majority in multiple staff would have at most two associates. So there weren't any books on the subject that I could find. I have two books on my library shelf now that have to do with staff and relationships, but they're not really very good. So somebody someday probably ought to write one that covers some of the needs that we do face these days in our growing churches. But what we have developed is really on a day-by-day, week-by-week, month-by-month basis, forging it out of our own experience. We've made some mistakes, but I think we've done some things right, are doing some things right. But I wanted you to know that when I went there, I was the only one. And I directed the choir, handled the music, the visitation, the preaching, everything that there was to do. And I directed the choir for 4 years until we got Pastor Hathaway on staff, take that over, and that was a great day for me when I could give that up because it was really a busy, busy time. I'm still as busy as I ever was, but I guess it's in a little different form. We began to grow. Our church was filling up, and we knew we were going to have to do something in order to keep up, and God provided us the beautiful property that we have, 26 and a half acres, out of the west side, where within a stone's throw of our front door, a new 65-acre shopping center is being built right now. Will be the largest regional shopping center from our area clear down to Portland. And they are estimating 50,000 cars a day, minimum, by our area in just a matter of 2 or 3 years. So we feel God really led us to the property that we are now using. In 1971, when we moved into our new facilities, we were averaging 450 in attendance. That would be 6 years ago. In the year that followed, we jumped up to 628, I believe it was, and then the year following to 761, and then we had a big jump to 1,071, 303 a Sunday increase in a year. That was 73. And then we recognized with our multiple schedule of services that we were hitting another impasse, that we were going to have to do something if we were to keep growing. And that means more facilities and more staff. And God has helped us to build more facilities. We just moved into a new sanctuary that seats 2,200, 41,000 square feet of space added to 37,000 that we had. We've also built two other education buildings. One we'll dedicate in 2 weeks. Those two buildings we built paying for them as we built them. And we'll move into the one that we will occupy this next week, completely paid for, $150,000 value. So we're grateful for that. We have added day school. 4 years ago, we started the day school with 18 students, I believe was the first count. By the end of that year, we had 36. That was kindergarten through grade 3. Then we added grades 4 and 5 and went up to about 75. Then we added grade 6 and jumped to 130. And this year we added grade 7 and 8. We have 220 in our day school, 110 in our daycare center, and about 80 in our preschool, which adds up to over 400 children a day roaming our grounds, which is a beautiful, beautiful sight. We changed the name of our church the day we moved to the new property from First Assembly of God to Evergreen Christian Center because we wanted to say something new to the community. We wanted to let them know we were going to have 7-day-a-week programs, daycare center. We had a gymnasium. We now have two in the building. Our old sanctuary is now a gymnasium, youth facility. And we wanted to say to the community, we're not just here 2 hours a week. We're here all week to serve you. And we felt the word center said that. We wanted to move away from a denominational sound because there was so much happening in the charismatic world. Angela Davis was a communist and was being tried for her communism, and the Presbyterian Church gave her $10,000 to defend herself, and many people left the Presbyterian Church because of that. And we just didn't feel it was a good time to say, we are the Assemblies of God, come and see us. There was a move away from denominationalism and a move to a center where they said Jesus is Lord. You can find your needs met here. We love our denomination, and we are tops in many categories in our denomination, and we're grateful for that. But we're not in Olympia to say, here is the Assemblies of God. We're there to say, here is Jesus, and here's a vibrant group of people who love you and care about you, and come and try it out. And we feel it's been very, very successful. We're not telling churches to change their name at all. We just feel it was the right thing to do in Olympia, and we feel it's been very effective for what we wanted to do. Last Sunday, we had 1,500 people in worship, and how many children? Another 500, probably, in the building. So we ministered, we know, to at least 2,000 people Sunday morning in the morning sessions. And with these hundreds during the week, it's a vibrant place to be. And continues to grow. Financially, we have moved from $37,000 in our budget in 1967 to what will be probably $1 million, at least $100,000 this year. We are already over $1 million, I believe, with missions through October, so we are still evaluating that. That's why we needed a business administrator. I was, of course, the overseer of all of that, and it was a big, big load, and I'm very thankful for Roger Lund's presence on our staff as a business administrator, because it is a $1 million enterprise. It takes a good deal of time just to keep things ordered and salaries paid. Last month, we paid over 70 people on our staff, including all of the schools, on a salary basis. So it takes a good deal of bookkeeping and a good deal of oversight, and that's why we feel we need a business administrator. So that's a little of the background of Evergreen Christian Center, and whenever you have questions through the day, please feel free to ask about any of that. I'd like to just lay some groundwork in this half hour, then you will have opportunity to meet with these men individually. We will have panels through the day where you can ask whatever you'd like to ask, but let me just kind of lecture to you for the next 30 minutes, if I may, on this theme of how to avoid staph infection. I'd like you to turn, if you have your Bible, to the third chapter of 1 Timothy. Now I want to read to you from the New International Version. The title of this section is Overseers and Deacons. And I want to read the section that deals with overseers, which begins with verse 1, chapter 3 of 1 Timothy. Here is a trustworthy saying. If anyone sets his heart on being an overseer, he desires a noble task. Now the overseer must be above reproach, the husband of but one wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to much wine, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? And that is a big, big question, friends. How can he take care of God's church if he does not know how to manage his own family? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must also have a good reputation with outsiders so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap. Down into two major points. Number one, how do you see yourself? And number two, insist on quality. How do you see yourself and insist on quality? The first thing that we need to ask ourselves, as far as I'm concerned, when we look at this matter of staff relationships and staff infection, is how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as an executive or a prophet? In the Lord's work, do you see yourself as an executive or a prophet? Now, it may surprise you what I'm going to say, because I think most of you would say, I am a prophet. And I'm about to tell you, you are an executive and not a prophet, in the sense that I believe you're thinking. And I fully believe it's one of the key factors in what God is doing in our world today in building his kingdom. And don't turn me off until you hear me clear through this point. I have heard people say many, many times, I am called to preach, not to administrate. And some of you here may have said that. That would be the statement of many men, if not most men, today in our fellowship particularly. Now, I would say that statement would be acceptable if it was presented by ministers whose preaching ability was conspicuous. But the people I'm hearing that statement from do not have conspicuous preaching ability, yet they're saying, I'm called to preach, not to administrate, and they're failing in both. Now, God does call us to preach. I believe that. But my church called me as an overseer. That's the word in the International Version, and I like it. When my church asked me to come and pastor them, they called me to be an overseer. Not just a preacher. They called me to be an overseer. There are other words for it. Pastor, shepherd, teacher, leader. Those are good words, but I like the general term of an overseer. That is my responsibility today, an overseer of the church in Olympia. I'm the overseer of this staff of men. I'm the overseer of our hundreds of members and adherents. I'm the overseer of the spiritual life as well as the material facets of the church in Olympia. I cannot divorce myself from that. That is my role. I have accepted that role. I am also a preacher, and I love to preach. And I feel in my heart I have the gift of preaching. But that is not enough. There have been many preachers who don't have pulpits because they would not accept the role of an overseer. And it's tragic in my mind. Now, if we can accept this concept, we move to the second aspect of this thing, and that is this overseer's tools. Every professional professional has tools. A mechanic has a lathe or a drill or other implements that are his tools. And the overseer has tools, and they are beautiful tools, men and women. Those are the tools of the overseer. Men and women, people, our greatest tools. And we must know how to get along with people if we're to avoid staff infection and to see a work for God grow. On the way up here in the car today, we were discussing some situations in our church, and one of the situations, maybe more than one, relates to two people. Two people who do not know how to get along with people. These people have been in the ministry. They have been through, one of them, a master's program, but constantly in difficulty. And it comes down to the point, even now, where can we jeopardize certain programs because these people will not get along with people? And there is so much harm done in the kingdom of God because these so-called overseers will not use the tools that God has given us, men and women. We have had to deal with people who are defensive in their attitude. You have to tell them certain things that are wrong in their programs, and they defend themselves constantly, and eventually that kind of a person is no longer of value in the Lord's work. He will not say, maybe you're right, I'll work at it, I'll pray over it, I'll really examine it. He's always defending his position. And as a result, he's rendered ineffective. I see this in pastors, I see it in church leaders in many areas. People who have not learned how to get along with people. It's like the school teacher that was assigned her training period, the semester that she was to leave the campus of the university and go out to a school and student teach. And after the period was over, she was asked how she liked it, and she said to the effect, I love teaching, but I sure can't stand the kids. And too bad, but that's the end of that individual. There are a lot of people in the ministry who like to preach, but they can't stand the people. And that's tragic. Would you believe that there is a man who said, who was advocating short-term pastorates, the following. I quote him, I have never lived in any town yet for 1 year, but that I have found some people I was glad to move away from. And that was his basis for short-term pastorates. And there are too many of those kind of people out there who are not willing to stay with a situation and learn to love people and work with people and build a staff which has to do with people in order that people might be saved and healed and filled with the Spirit and brought into a good relationship with God. I was teaching the other Wednesday night. We were moving through the New Testament chapter by chapter, and we came to the book of Titus. And in Titus chapter 1, I came across Paul's instruction to Titus, and Paul told him to go to Crete, and at Crete, lead the church. And then I read with interest what Paul's evaluation was of the people in the church in Crete. Do you remember what they were like? He said, they're liars, they're evil beasts, and they're slow bellies. That slow-bellied one kind of caught me, and it means idle gluttons. Slow-bellies, that's beautiful. That's descriptive. Slow-bellies, they sit around idle, eating. Slow-bellies, idle gluttons. That was his congregation. Liars, evil beasts, slow-bellies. What did Paul expect of Titus? expected him to go there and take these men as they were and work with them and lead them into a right relationship with Jesus Christ. What would men say today? I don't want any more opportunities. I want a church. How do you see yourself? An overseer? So often people take a great deal of pride in stating how they have been able to tell people where to get off. I want you to know that there is a great need for us to be called to let men know how to get on, not where to get off. We are not called to tell men where to get off. We're called to tell them where to get on, where to plug in. And that has to do with our greatest asset, people, our tools, men and women. Now, let's look at this overseer and his limitations. We're still under point one, if you're outlining. A was, we are called to be an overseer. Point B was, our tools are men and women. Point C is limitations as an overseer. That might help you get it in order. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the overseer's limitations are his time, his gifts or his abilities, and his vision. I would sum it up in those three categories. His time, his gifts or his abilities, and his vision. To put it into context, could I just ask you this question? Where would Billy Graham be without Cliff Barrels, Grady Wilson, or Bev Shea? Billy Graham had the wisdom one day, long time ago, to recognize that what God was leading him to was going to require some dedicated assistance. And he sought out men that would work with him and share what he felt and do what we know they have done and are doing around the world. You cannot think of Billy Graham without thinking of Cliff Barrows or Grady Wilson or Bev Shea or Ted Smith, or on and on you could go. I have a limitation of time. I have a limitation of gifts and abilities. And I have a limitation of vision. I need to surround myself with men and women who can help me in the area of time, who can help me in the area of ability, and who can help me in the area of vision, who can see things when I can't. I've got to be the kind of overseer that will permit that to happen. And here is the big problem, ladies and gentlemen. The biggest problem of all is our inability to share. Our inability to share. And when we cannot share, we stagnate. What we have put our hand to lead dies. And all kinds of problems ensue. I want to give you some statistics that are red hot from Springfield to illustrate my point. They just came in a letter from G. Raymond Carlson to me 2 days ago. I've been asked to come to Springfield a week from yesterday to sit on a committee, and because of this committee work, these statistics were in the letter. And I mean, were they tremendous assets to me to get these figures at this point. I've never seen them before. And it just underscores what I'm going to say here about the inability to share and how we must realize our limitations. There are 9,394 churches in the Assemblies of God. 9,394. Got that? Now put down the figure 3,320. 3,320 churches have an attendance of 0 to 49. 0 to 49. 3,320 churches. Now put down the figure 3,133. 50 to 99. Average attendance. Got it? Anything you need repeated there so far? 3,133 churches, 50 to 99 in attendance. put down the figure 1,920. 1,920, this is the 100 to 199 group. Now, if you add that up, that's 8,373 of the 9,394 churches. To complete it, 784 is the next figure. 200 to 399 attendance. 200 to 399, 784. The next figure is 192. That's the 400 to 699 category in attendance. 400 to 699, there are 192 churches. And the 45, the last 45 of the churches everybody wants to pastor, 700 plus, 45 only in the Assemblies of God. Now, when I saw that, man, I suddenly got a picture of our biggest problem. You take those first three categories from 199 down to zero. It is the problem of men who will not share their ministry. The churches get to a point and they stop because they're not willing to take the risks, make the sacrifices that are necessary to build a staff, to reach that total community with the gospel that the Lord has given to us. I'll tell you, there is such an opportunity in the Assemblies of God for growth. We ought to hide our heads in the sand, ashamed that we've only had 37% increase in the last 10 years. When we look at statistics like this, it's tragic. And I firmly believe in my heart, it's the inability of people to share, to see themselves as an overseer, not just as a preacher, a prophet, but an overseer, the New Testament word, the overseer of the work of God. The Old Testament prophet stood alone. And he was thrown in a pit many times, drug out of the city. I don't think that brings too much glory to God these days, when we're to be overseers of the work of the Lord. How do you see yourself? That's the question. You see yourself as an overseer? As far as staff relationships is concerned, building work for God, I think we have to start there. I hope I'm not too far off base. I'm still evaluating it, but that's where I am now, especially since I saw these statistics. The first associate position I had was a total negative circumstance for me. But I needed a positive one, because as a 22-year-old young man right out of Bible school, I said, God, help me to ever remember how I've been treated in this association. Help me to ever remember the things that this man who is the senior pastor is doing that he ought not to do. And God has helped me to remember. And I've tried to treat my staff as people. And I've tried to pastor with people in mind. Men and women who are my tools. If I can't work with them, I'm done for. I've got to love them and work with them and encourage them and be an overseer of them. That's my calling. It's my position. Secondly, insist on quality. I don't have any other way to put it. It doesn't rhyme with anything, but it's number two. Insist on quality. I want to start with the merchandise. I'm sure you would agree with me that we have the best thing there is in merchandise, the gospel. I don't know anything like it. Do people look upon the gospel and God's work as though it were the best thing there is? I think in many churches they've lost sight of that. They're spending all kinds of time fussing and fuming, instead of using the merchandise that God has given to us. Do you know people today are hungry? People today are thirsty? People today want the merchandise that we have and have had for centuries. But often they're not getting it. I want to tie this into an illustration that I heard. A tramp knocked at the door one day, and he asked the man of the house for a meal, and the man said, "Well, I'll give you a meal if you come down into the cellar with me, and you move this pile of wood from this corner over to this corner." And the tramp gladly went down and moved that pile of wood from one corner to the other. Then he gave him a meal. The next day, another knock on the door, and a different tramp wanting a meal. And he said, "I'll give you a meal if you come into the cellar with me and move the pile of wood from this corner over to here." Right back to where it was before. Now, that story simply is used in the framework that I wish to speak in these next few moments. We have worn people out with wood-carrying tasks. Move it from this corner to that corner and that corner back. We have literally frazzled them with menial and insignificant tasks like that. And how often have I heard it? If we don't put this person to work, they'll leave. That is a bad, bad way to get help. It's just carrying the wood from that corner to that corner, and then you'll ask the next person to carry it back again. And who's going to be fulfilled doing that? So there are two pictures I want to give you this afternoon of this overseer and his relationship with people, with staff and others. The first picture is that of the overseer or the executive looking over the shoulder of his workers, making sure they carry every stick from the corner to the other corner. He has them assigned to the job, but he follows them step by step, looking over their shoulder, making sure they do it. Now, what's the problem with that? He's not doing anything but checking up on that person. And that's what I've seen over and over again. And that's why staffs change so much, so rapidly in the assemblies of God, because they're carrying wood and there's some executive making sure they carry it right and move every stick. Now, when I ask people to come on my staff, I ask them to do it to relieve me of some responsibility that will release me to other important responsibilities that are more in my area of gifts and abilities. And I do not have the time to walk behind them looking over their shoulder. So that brings us to the second picture of the overseer. One who gives confidence to his staff so that they can attempt things beyond their apparent abilities and their apparent experiences. And if in carrying the wood, they see in that basement an opportunity to do something better and bigger, they're free to do it. Because you've given them that right. A realistic appraisal of efforts and results. In the mail yesterday came the church paper from Memphis, Tennessee, Pastor Jim Hamill at First Assembly. And Jim Hamill in his paper was talking about their four-day retreat, staff retreat. And I quote what he said in his paper as he was telling his church about his staff, full-time staff, going away for this four-day retreat. This is what he said. "Every department of the church will come under an extremely rigid scrutiny by the total staff, as well as a thorough examination of all activities, services, and programs of the church. Both the weaknesses and the strengths of First Assembly's programs will be examined. Plans and programs will be projected for 1978. Means and methods of implementing those plans will be projected also." I know Jim Hamill, and I know a little bit about that great church. And one of the strong points of that church is exactly what he stated in his paper, that staff is going to have total openness and total opportunity to speak their mind on any program that's going on in that church or any program that they hope to have going on in that church. A total openness. The overseer wants their input. He wants their criticism. He wants Now, I feel I have to be, as an overseer, enthusiastic about the gifts of others, even though those gifts may be lacking in me. I'm enthusiastic about Al Haltine's gifts. He has told me he never wants to pastor a church. He has great gifts, and I'm enthusiastic about his gifts, and I'm so glad he's been willing to share those gifts with me and our congregation. And I'm grateful for the gifts of Roger Brown, Mike Axton, Harold Ogren, Roger Lund. I would be foolish not to be enthusiastic about their gifts, because their gifts means blessing to me, as well as to our entire church. Not interested in the quality of those gifts. Now, quality will demand change at times in church work. We're talking about quality. We just looked at two pictures of how you can be an overseer. Quality will demand change at times. Ralph Nabors has a book titled Seven Last Words of the Church. You know what those words are? We never did it that way before. He's written a whole book on that. Seven Last Words of the Church. Now, there are two big words in contrast that I feel we must ever keep before us, friends, and those two words are change and openness. In contrast to the seven last words, these two words, change and openness. And the reason so many of these churches are setting back at the 49 level or the 99 level or the 199 level is because they're unwilling to change and be open. Just a week ago, this past weekend, my wife and I were invited to come back to Wisconsin to dedicate her home church, a little town called Monroe, Wisconsin. You've probably never heard of it. It's the Swiss cheese capital of America. It's where we were married in 1953. That church has been in that community for 40 years. A week ago Sunday was their 40th anniversary. Their attendance has been about 65. A young man went into that community almost 4 years ago with a vision, with a desire for change and openness, and we just dedicated a week ago Sunday a sanctuary to seat 400 people. And there were over 200 people there, and they are just busting their buttons about what's happening in that community where they've had 65 in the church for years. Man comes in with the ability for change and openness, and though it's small in the sense that now I'm used to, it was exciting to be there and to see the thrill of those people. And I know they're excited because one of the men wrote out a check for my wife's plane fare round trip because the church wasn't going to pay her way and invited me to preach. But he was so excited about his church, and we were willing to take time out to come. He made her plane fare. Just bam, there it was. I didn't even say anything about it. I was very glad to pay it. I was glad to be there. But he was excited about his church and the new thrust in the community that they have. You see, they sit there for so long and willing to change and be open. Somebody with a vision, with a desire for that. Here's the theme song of a lot of churches. Like a mighty turtle moves the church of God. Brothers, we are treading where we've always trod. I'm interested in quality. I believe our churches ought to be the most exciting establishment in any community. And our goal is not only 10% of Olympia's population, but our goal is to become more famous than the Olympia Brewery. We're interested in quality. And in order to get that, these things are important to keep before you. Now, in conclusion for this session, problems or dangers involved in a staff. Here they are. Not seeing where each member fits. totally frustrating not to know where you fit. Not to know where you can roam. So often people are brought into situations and they don't know where they fit. Not utilizing the person's capacity to the fullest. It's like carrying the wood back and forth again. Not really finding their ability, their talent, where they feel most comfortable. Have you ever seen the book, The Peter Principle? It's not a religious book. It's not the Peter you're thinking about. It's the name of the man who wrote the book, Peter. What is his last name? I didn't think of it. The Peter Principle. And the Peter Principle is this, that many times a sergeant, well, let me rephrase it, a corporal who is tremendously successful as a corporal is asked to take the third stripe and become a sergeant, and he's a horrible sergeant. He just can't assume that authority. He doesn't have the command, that voice, oh, oh, oh. And he's a total failure as a sergeant. And there are men who work in an assembly type situation who are faithful and effective and are asked to be the foreman, and the thing just falls flat. The Peter Principle is we need to find where people fit and not demand of them any more than where they fit or where their gift is. Our problem is to find that gift and there let them serve, let them roll, let them dream, let them do without walking behind them, seeing if they put the wood in the right place. How does the staff relate to the church board? Totally. This is my conviction. Our staff meets with the board regularly. I want them to have a voice. They do not have a vote, but they have a voice. We have a Friday morning prayer and share time every week with the board. 6:30 in the morning, Fridays. Gather together for prayer, sharing. The board looks upon our staff as leaders. We look upon our board as leaders. It is that kind of a relationship. We relate to that church board totally. How and when do you secure staff? I would answer that in the negative. Not when you can afford it, not when all else fails, and not to enhance your laziness. Need I expand on the last one? There have been some who say, oh, I'll just be glad when I can hire me an associate so I won't have to do so much. You don't hire them to enhance your laziness. I'll guarantee you, I don't care if you have 20 staff members, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're going to be as busy as you ever were, if not more so. But a lot more is getting done. Not when you can afford it. We never hire staff when we can afford it. If that staff member is worth his salt, he will pay his way by his effectiveness in the realm of people that he will touch. We've proved that. And you don't secure staff when all else fails. To have somebody come in to bail you out. You don't do it to enhance your laziness. Now, that's just my preliminary remarks to our entire day. I hope it will serve as somewhat of a foundation. At 4 o'clock, you will meet with the associates in the area of your interest. And then at 5 o'clock, we will have a question and answer period for 1 hour. And we all are here to answer any questions you want, which will probably magnify that which I've just said to you. Okay? Brother Griffin, something to say? Would it be great inconvenience if we kind of all thank you so much? And again, let me repeat how good it is to be together. We have an hour, and I sure don't intend to talk that long. I'd like to just say a few things and then open it up for your questions and address ourselves to some specifics that pertain to the senior pastor. May I ask first, how many of you now are working with staff? May I see your hand? Most everybody. The rest of you are on your way to somewhere or students. That's good. I see my own son here. He wants to learn what it's like to be a senior pastor, so I'm grateful. How many of you don't know my son? Stand up, Rick. We're proud of him. He's a student here. Good. Some of the questions we are to, not necessarily questions, but things we are to talk about in this session is a description of your job, goals for your specific area, how's your time used, and so on. I guess when I'm out in seminars, one question that is asked me most often is, how is your time used? How do you spend your time? So let me start with that, if I may, and begin by saying this. My schedule has changed so much in 10 years. And maybe I'll talk about where it was and where it is. When I first went to Olympia, my schedule was greatly filled up with visiting. I did a lot of it. And I did because of some of the needs that I felt were in the church. There was a great gap, I felt, between the pulpit and the pew, and I wanted to bring that back together. I asked the Lord how to do that, and He dropped into my mind just a couple things. One was to get all the birthdays in the church and all the anniversaries. Some of you have heard me talk about this before. So I began to send cards on everybody's anniversary, on everybody's birthday, and I still do, and to visit in the home on the wedding anniversary. Nobody was sick. Nobody had asked me to come. I just wanted to stop by and say, I noticed it was your anniversary, and I want to pray with you and just let you know I love you and pray God's blessing upon you. And it just dropped a lot of guards and brought that pulpit close to the pew, which we needed. And I did it religiously for as long as I could. Then I could not keep up with it, so I began to write notes on anniversaries and still do that, along with the birthdays. But because of the increase in congregation and the increase of staff, I've had to give most all of that over. In fact, I do no visitation now, unless there are extreme emergencies, simply because of the scope of the work and the way things go in a big church situation. I do a great deal of counseling, however, in my present state, but most all of it in my office. The rest would be at lunch or something of that kind when the occasion would demand it. So where I was 10 years ago is a great deal different than where I am today. Much of my time was outside of the office, and now most all of it's inside. In the interim period, I had to adjust. And I must say this, it was one of the most difficult things for me to do. I was so frustrated on occasion that I would seek out some of my ministerial friends who were going through growth as I was. And I remember Hugh Rosenberg in Cincinnati, who's a good friend of mine, and his church has had phenomenal growth. I asked him one time, Hugh, what do you do about your schedule? Are you frustrated like I am? And Hugh looked almost with amazement at me, as if to say, you too? And he said, it's just one of the biggest battles I've ever gone through. So I felt good that it just wasn't me. And the battle was that you weren't out there door to door. Other people were doing that, and you were, in a sense, pulling in your skirts, and yet we still felt we wanted to be on a person-to-person basis with all of these people. But how do you do it without being out there knocking on their doors? And our conversation was a great help to me, because his feelings were just about the same as mine, that a good deal of that person-to-person relationship has to be done from the pulpit. And you do that by making people feel you're a human being, that you're not somebody 10 feet up there above them, but you're on their level, You do it by personal illustrations, by bringing your family, and I know my boys have maybe chafed under this a bit, but I like to use them for illustrations because it lets people know you're human. You have circumstances going on in your lives just like they do, and they relate to that, feel they can talk to you because of that. Now the big question is, are you effective in doing it? How do you gauge that effectiveness? Well, I can tell you just from Sunday, perhaps, what has come to my attention. We were in our missionary convention, and Bill Williams from France was our speaker Saturday night and Sunday morning, taking Bill and his wife Joanne back to the airport Sunday afternoon. They volunteered this observation. They said, it's wonderful the way people feel close to you. And they further said, many people over this weekend have come to us and said how much we love the pastor and how close we feel. And we notice after church that you make yourself available. So many churches we go in, he said, the pastor disappears through a back door. And he's gone. And I smile because I feel like I'd like to many times. Or weary, if nothing else. But I just don't feel you can do that. I feel you have to be available so people can come and touch you and see if it is really the same kind of cloth they wear, and that you are a human being. And I was really grateful for what he said, because sometimes you wonder if that relationship is there. So it has changed, and I struggle with that, but I feel like I'm getting more comfortable with it all the time. In the area of time, the responsibility of transferring these things to other people is the big struggle, and trusting them with it. So in the area of visitation, since I brought it up, Harold Ogren handles the supervision of that whole thing. He does the hospital visitation. I only go when there's very urgent need, a very long-time member type thing, because I just can't. It's not that I don't want to, it's that I can't. I used to go to the hospital before he came on staff and was totally frustrated with myself because I was looking at my watch, knowing that I had appointments to get back to and other things to do, and I just felt so guilty about that, that I wasn't really ministering to those people. I was just paying them my respects. Here I am, you lucky people, and I've got to hurry because other things are waiting, and that's not good. But now he can go up there and spend all day if he needs to. He's led people to the Lord one after another and has ministered in depth where I never could do that before because of the other things that I was responsible for. And he can do it from 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 with Saturday off and do far more than I could ever do. Plus, keep up on the other things of visiting new converts and assigning visitors and all of that kind of thing. So it's a matter of adjustment, passing things on, and letting them take the ball. So let me speak now with that as a background to my present schedule. First thing I'm asked is, do you have a day off? And the answer is no. But I'm not recommending that. In fact, I almost feel convicted to say that because so many people are telling me, take one. But I just put together funny, I guess. I used to take a day off, religiously, and it was Monday. But as the church has grown, I felt like there are so many things on Monday that I needed to attend to, carryovers from the weekend, staff people that need direction, secretaries that need direction, that I have to at least be there partially on Monday, and I like to catch up. Now, I don't worry about what time I get there on Monday. I sleep on Monday morning until my body says, you're ready to function again. I let it dictate what time I get going on Monday, because I put in a very heavy weekend. In our multiple schedule, I preach twice and teach in between, and a lot of preaching on Sunday night, and baptize, and have committee meetings and membership meetings on Sunday night. So it's a very, very full day, and you're really exhausted when you go home, and I just like to crash and not worry about what time I have to get up. I sleep better when I don't have to think about things in the morning, so Monday I don't even worry about it. I just let my body tell me. So when I do get into the office, I take care of things that are urgent, answer phone calls that have accumulated, give direction to anybody that needs to, line up the mailer for my secretary, the material that needs to go into that.